heads up, and we will record the interview as well. As I said, joining me right now, Miriam Mouton. Miriam, welcome back to the studio. You were here a little while ago when you kicked off your campaign. Actually, we had you here. And now we're heading to the wire. Monday, of course, is the official last day of voting. But voting's been pretty brisk here in the riding, in Cobourg anyway. I know in Hamilton Township it's been pretty low. I've been getting my updates on Twitter from Pat McCourt. Any idea what the turnout's been thus far? Have you checked that out?
In Cobourg?
In Cobourg, yeah.
In Cobourg, I believe the reports come out late in the afternoon, and as of yesterday, I think it was about 22% of eligible voters, which is a good turnout. And I've run into a few people who are planning to vote this weekend, so that's all good news.
Well, if you haven't voted already, and, you know, maybe you want to make it a family event. Maybe you and your friends, you know, you want to get together or sign up around the old computer, because, of course, you don't have to. There's no polling station. There's no paper ballots this time around.
Actually, there's two polling stations.
Well, but they're not standard polling stations. People, when I told people there were two polling stations, they went, oh, good, so I can go in there and put a ballot in. No, there's still... There's no paper ballots, folks. None at all. So when you do attend the two available stations, and those are there to help you out, actually, at the Cobourg Public Library and at the Town Hall, which is open until about 5 o'clock, I guess, tonight. Or is it open later tonight?
No, I believe it's 4:30, just regular business hours.
There you go, 4:30.
It's actually open. Town Hall is open later, right till deadline.
Yep, 8 o'clock on Monday. Yep. Mm-hmm. And for more information, you can always call Lorraine Brace. She's very happy to take your call, although she's probably swamped right now. You might have to leave a number. She'll get back to you, or someone on staff will get back to you. I know they've been run off their feet. It's been quite a campaign, both for the staff as well as for the candidates. How are you feeling right now, Miriam? I mean, when I first spoke to you and you had just launched your campaign and we were talking about, you know, you're leaving council as a councillor. You're hoping to get on as the mayor, officiator, I guess, is a facilitator. There's the word I was looking for. The mayor really is a facilitator, right? Especially in municipal government. I mean, you only vote if there's a tie. I mean, you can vote any time, though, can't you?
There are rules which govern the voting by the mayor. Mm-hmm. In fact, I got a question from a citizen today who was posed the question, if I supported, should the mayor... vote to break a tie? Should they send the matter back for review? And if you'd like, I could actually explain how my experience at council has been. And I think one of the very important aspects of a council and being in a public meeting is that you have to deal with issues one by one as they come before you, because you never know how important a particular item is to someone out in the public or that might actually be in the council chamber, mm-hmm. waiting for a council decision. And normally, the mayor chairs the meeting. And as you right. say, he or she is a facilitator. And normally, if there's a tie, then the mayor will vote to break the tie. But we also have situations. We have two types of meetings, committee of the whole and regular meeting. And it is possible, and I've sometimes seen, and I would call this natural consensus, where an item is discussed, information comes forward, it's quite obvious that there might be some missing information or lack of information. And what I call a natural consensus is when the council with the mayor decide, well, maybe we should send this back. So there's no voting, there's no motion at that time. Now, that might address in part, you know, when a mayor may decide, well, send it back for review. Mm-hmm. My personal belief is that an item should be well reported, any memo that comes from staff or an advisory committee, mm-hmm. that the preparation by the various members of council is thorough, and questions are asked, and with a proper debate and discussion, then the matter should go to a vote. As you probably know, a mayor can vote if it's a recorded vote. In fact, the mayor has to vote if it's a recorded vote.
Okay. So there you go. That's just a little bit about how the mayor votes or can vote and what the requirements are there. Are you feeling good? How's it looking out there? Is it feeling like it's going to be a tight race, Miriam? Are the numbers going to... I mean, we know the numbers won't come out until after 8 o'clock when the polls close, but what is your sense out there? Are you getting a sense that folks are thinking that, you know, yeah, we want some change maybe in the mayor's chair, but we don't necessarily want to, you know, go with somebody completely new, so they're probably a little more comfortable with you than, say, a Don Kirkup, for instance?
I've had conversations with many citizens. I think what is wonderful about this election campaign is that citizens are engaged because there are many, many good candidates. I've had an excellent campaign. Spoken with a lot of people working with me, campaign team, and I believe it is a genuine race. I mean, we have candidates that have positions. Mm-hmm. I always felt that I was a serious contender, and I bring forward to the election campaign various skills from the past. So I'm not assuming anything at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm out there doing my job and meeting with people.
Well, that's probably the best way to do it. I mean, at this point, I spoke to Gil on Monday, and he said pretty much the same thing. He's hearing out there that there's a lot of people out there that want to see a difference, but not necessarily a complete change. No throwing the baby out with the bathwater, as it were, but they'd like to see some continuity as well as perhaps new direction or new leadership on some of the other issues. So, obviously, they do have a choice at this point. And
yeah, if I could address the continuity and change, I think that... I mean, you can have a change, and it might be very well that when the new council meets that there will be some changes. But what is fundamental is that the basic elements of how council has operated would be there. Mm-hmm. But perhaps the philosophy on how they're implemented is different. So, yes, there are skills, various skills that people will bring, whether they're new or whether they're incumbent. But it is always, you need to be able to adapt to and be flexible to change. Mm-hmm. So it's perhaps a bit of a fear position to say, well, you know, we can't have total change. I'm not advocating for total change, but I certainly think that there can be improvements in the system that we have. And I'm hoping that the new council can sit down and actually bring ideas to the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the concerns that's being raised by a lot of citizens is this idea that staff are run amok, perhaps, or that staff might have too much control. I know that as a councillor, you can't speak specifically to staff issues. I know there's a bylaw in place that doesn't allow you to point a finger, if you will. But some of the concern that a lot of the electors have had, especially over the past four, maybe even longer, is that... you know, there may be a little too much control in one or two positions at town staff, and that maybe some of that control needs to be wrested back into the hands of council. Is that something you would agree with on that?
Well, what I can address, Dave, is that council sets policy, mm-hmm. and it's operationalized by staff. But to complete the circle, there has to be regular reports back to council on the efficacy of the policy that they've set. Mm-hmm. And in my 8 years, I recall getting certain reports, which we no longer get. There's a philosophical approach to this, mm-hmm. and I think council needs to understand how effective their policies are, and I think that there can be improvements in that regard. I also feel that there needs to be a standardization in the type of reports that do come to council. You have to remember that most of council are part... It's not the same type of pay that let's say the City of Toronto councillors get. And so the quality of the information that comes to council needs to be of a certain level, a standard level that includes the basic information, an assessment of all the options, prioritization, because staff are the experts mm-hmm. in the field, and they need to present that so that each member of council understands it, but also a layperson in the public, mm-hmm. because these reports are actually published as part of the agenda. So I'm saying is that there are some of these reports are exemplary, but some of them need to come up to the standard. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can make sure that the basics are covered, then the quality of information will be that much better for council on which to base its decision.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay a few bills here, but we'll be right back with more Miriam Mouton here on your Drive Time. Stick around.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 133 in Cobourg to catch these great events.
Every Thursday is Tall Boy Thursday. Ladies Tuesday happens once a month, and keep your eyes peeled for the meat draw every Friday and Saturday. If you've missed any of these events this month, be sure to catch them next month.
The Royal Canadian Legion is at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
Julie Mavis has the skill set that Port Hope needs. She knows how Town Hall works and doesn't need on-the-job training. My name is Brian Levy, and I'm voting Julie Mavis for mayor.
I'm Lori Carr, and I'm voting Julie Mavis for mayor.
My name is Sarianna Burnett, and I'm voting for Julie Mavis.
I'm Aaron Sawyer, and I'm voting for Julie Mavis for mayor.
This is Julie Mavis. On October 27th, vote for a smaller, smarter, faster, and cheaper government. Vote Julie Mavis for mayor.
Art enriches our lives. The Art Gallery of Northumberland has been enriching the lives of local residents for nearly 55 years, featuring a collection of over 800 artworks. It's a public art gallery for the people of Northumberland County, presenting stimulating and inviting exhibitions and programming for everyone. The Art Gallery of Northumberland is a charitable organization operating to benefit our community. For more information on the Art Gallery of Northumberland or to make a donation, visit artgalleryofnorthumberland.com.
A question for David Evans, physiotherapist and co-owner, We Fix You Physiotherapy and Foot Health Centers.
What exactly is a physiotherapist?
Great question, because a lot of people confuse what a physio is between chiropractors and massage therapists. Ideally, what I'll tell you is physiotherapists are university-educated health professionals. We're considered primary health care providers. You don't need a doctor's note to come in and see us. Physiotherapists, we can work with people with heart conditions, breathing conditions, joint pains, neuro problems, seniors, sports injuries. What we do is we bring you in for about an hour an assessment and we listen to your problems. And then we come up with a diagnosis and we come up with a treatment that will best suit your condition to get you better as fast as possible.
For more information or to make an appointment with a physiotherapist, contact We Fix You in Coburg or Port Hope, or visit we-fix-you.com.
I am standing with a crowd of the faithful outside Ed White's Appliance Repair on Mill Street in Port Hope, where they're waiting for the word. You could hear a pin drop as he raises his hand. He's about to speak. Let's listen.
Yes, it is worth fixing.
You heard it here. It is worth fixing. Are you a believer? Call Ed at 885-7109 and say, yes, I do believe.
And welcome back. Thank you to our incredible sponsors, by the way, for being a part of it. And if you'd like to sponsor my show, give me a call at 905-372-2321 or 2391. By the way, as I said, we will be hooking up with Pete Fisher soon. I understand he's on one of the bridge overpasses here in along the Highway of Heroes, because, of course, Corporal Nathan Cirillo's body will be transported from Ottawa right through to his... he's actually going to be lying... there's going to be a viewing in Hamilton, I understand, and then there'll be a funeral in Hamilton, which is where Mr. Cirillo is from, Nathan Cirillo is from. On that note, back to Miriam Mouton. So, Miriam, one of the issues that has come up, and people have seen it, you know, from watching council or having... engaged with town staff and whatever, is the perception out there that you're not able to work with staff. Can you address that issue? Is that something that you, is that just a bad spin out there that people are saying, oh, well, you know, you don't want to vote for Miriam because she can't work with staff? I don't find that to be the case. I mean, I have watched you over the last several years. I mean, I've been here for not very long, folks. I am a newbie. I have only been here a decade or so. But in the time that I've been here, I mean, I've always felt that, you know, the work that you've done as a counselor, making sure that the answers are there for the public, asking important questions in a public forum, not in camera, and making sure that the public is sort of kept up to speed. But while that is going on, there's sort of this underlying tension between what you've done or what you are doing for the benefit of taxpayers and for the benefit of voters, and how it's sort of ruffled feathers with staff. And that, and there has been this thing. I mean, the local media has been sort of carrying this banner that, you know, you have a hard time working with staff. Can you dispel that as just a crazy rumor?
It is a crazy rumor, and it's untrue. But I could guess where the basis is, because staff really have, they answer to the CAO, or they answer to the supervisors and the CAO. Mm-hmm. The only staff person that council really directs is the CAO. The CAO is council's only employee. Mm-hmm. Where there's a problem is that if you have a self-appointed executive committee of council that may be giving contradictory information, so there's a multi-headed taskmaster. And for myself, I focus on the work that I'm supposed to do. I'll ask the questions. I will actually send emails in advance with my questions. But, mm-hmm. you know, if I don't get an answer on the second or third email, I'll have to ask it at council, right? So mm-hmm. I think that that is it is a rumor that I don't know where it started. Mm-hmm. It's not true. And in fact, I've had staff say to me, look, I'm getting conflicting direction here. I don't know what to do, but mm-hmm. I have to follow my boss's instruction. And so I actually have challenged Gil, actually, more mm-hmm. than once, saying, you know, well, you're the mayor, but you can't be.
Well, again, if you know, we have
going cross purposes.
We have the coordinator system presently, right? And I know that all deputy mayoral candidates said on the TV Kojiko debates that they want to get rid of the coordinator system and go with something else. And I know that there have been problems in the past with the coordinator system. And what you've just sort of described to me is here you are as the coordinator, and you're trying to work within the confines of the coordinator portfolio, and yet you've got this sort of three-headed hydra that's sort of working behind the scenes to say, well, we don't really necessarily think we should do that, or we're going to do it this way. Oh, and don't worry about what she says, because she's, you know, just the coordinator. It doesn't really matter. And again, this isn't me making this up, by the way.
This is being perpetuated
by Northumberland News, by Northumberland Today. I mean, I know that there have been some weird...
Yeah, I think they're reporting.
They are reporting.
Yeah,
I'm not blaming the media, by the way. I don't want anyone to think I'm
poking
them.
There's also a fear factor, mm-hmm. is if I get too close to the quick with my questions, then someone's hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing my job. And as you rightly pointed out, I'm doing it in the best interest of the citizens. Now, I also have an obligation to work with my colleagues on council, mm-hmm. and to make sure. And also, I'm not out to point fingers at staff either. But there comes to a point where if something needs to be brought forward, I mean, I actually pointed out that there was a $40,000 mistake just about to happen at council. Mm-hmm. I mean, did the media pick that up? I didn't see it reported.
I didn't see the story either.
No, this is the wayfinding signage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and fortunately, I was able to convince my colleagues to send it back to staff for review. They were going to order the wrong signs, $40,000.
Yeah.
You know, and this just happened a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... You know, it's politics, and you volunteer to enter this arena,
mm-hmm.
and you do the best job you can, and you work for the people. I would like to say, years ago, when I first got elected to council, director of legislative services at the time, I remember in our orientation, said that... council steers the boat and staff row.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to learn who exactly puts the boat in the water and in the direction, you know. And I think that's the citizens that decide which water it goes in, mm-hmm. and which direction it's pointing.
Right.
So sure, staff row, council steers, but there's a public component there.
Well, we're the ones who provide the boat.
Yes.
You know, there's no boat, there's no captain, there's no ship, there's no steerage without the boat. And we are the boat, and that's a great analogy, actually.
I think it's a good idea.
Because we're all in this together, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's an idea. If people have a concern, I've had calls, like people asking me, like, tell me what you think about this. This is what I've heard. I mean, there was one lady that said to me, oh, I'm hearing that you meet at coffee shops and there's a group of men that are telling you what to do. And anyone who knows me knows that. That can't possibly be true.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like that I'm some sort of puppet. But, you know, it's someone who's trying to, you know, pass information out there that is not accurate. And mm-hmm. I really do appreciate, because citizens, I get the feeling generally that if they hear something that is troublesome, they come to me directly mm-hmm. and ask me.
Well, because they want the info, right?
They want it straight.
We all want to make sure that, you know, because here's the problem. And I mean, we look at Ottawa right now, okay? Every statement that comes out of any minister's mouth right now, you know, is written by the PMO. These are unelected people who work within the Prime Minister's office. They're the ones who are steering the ship of state. They're the ones who are making the speeches. They're the ones who are writing what these guys are supposed to say, or these men and women are supposed to say. I mean, even the Heritage Minister last week, there was an announcement from the Heritage Ministry, but it wasn't her who spoke. We didn't hear from the Heritage Minister. We heard from a spokesperson for the Heritage Ministry, and that's what we're hearing in this government. And that's what people are afraid of, especially at the municipal level. I mean, we don't vote for, you know, the guys in the back room. Nobody picks a candidate based on who they've got working for them in the back room. We pick candidates because of what we see. And the perception out there, whether it's right or wrong, that people are being controlled. I mean, even Mayor Brock Anier, there's people are saying, oh, well, he's got people behind his campaign. Or Don Kirkup, well, there's obviously he and that Pagnuolo fellow are working together as a ticket, and they're trying to change things. So obviously there's some backroom machinations. That's the one thing people hate in elections. I mean, I've spoken to people for years. They're like, oh, I'm not voting for that person because I know he's working with XYZ people, and I don't want to have anything to do with those guys. And so I can understand that you would get that kind of concern from voters, because people are always worried that there's an ulterior motive. Oh, once she becomes mayor, she's going to do something hinky. Well, you know, you're not Rob Ford.
I actually met a Toronto voter today in one of the downtown shops. Mm-hmm. And yes, we had that conversation.
Yeah. Well, and it's a conversation a lot of people are having, because, you know, especially these days when people are concerned about their tax dollars, they're concerned about where they're going to get their next paycheck from, a lot of people, or whether or not they're going to be able to pay their mortgage or their rent. And the last thing they want is to have something hinky going on with their town hall, and especially as it pertains to their expenses, right? So I guess what I'm asking you in a roundabout way is, how is it that you're going to be different, and how is it you can inspire that kind of trust and faith in the voters, Miriam?
Well, my experience of 8 years on council has shown me what has changed in 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's been information that has been more readily available to us on a regular basis. But it seems increasingly that we have to be knowledgeable enough to be asking for this information, and it's not coming to us in a form that is equitable across all councillors, all members of council.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why that changed. I think it's a philosophical management approach, and I'm a firm believer that that council should not be managed. Council has a leader. But management of council is very problematic, because it reduces the authority of council, and council has a job in its duty to the taxpayer and the citizens of Cobourg.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the strengths that I bring forward is that I have experience with different CAOs and different leaders of council and different members of council and communicating with various citizens. And there's some people that, I mean, people have wonderful ideas. I also feel that I'm someone that I have experience in having diverse viewpoints at the same table,
mm-hmm.
and facilitation skills. And I think we must not be afraid of public input. And increasingly, we seem to be less and less able to, we being the governance of the town, being less able to include the public in mm-hmm. meaningful ways. And it's almost like a them and us. And that might work for a sports team. It's not really a best approach, because for local government, and local government is so important to citizens, because mm-hmm. that's where really the everyday decisions are made. And you had mentioned something earlier. So the citizens who vote do not choose a portfolio coordinator. They elect members at large.
That's right.
The portfolios are assigned afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
What one change I would like to do is to have the whole council involved in the discussion of portfolios, because traditionally that's not the way it's been done.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I feel that I have enough experience from over this time that I can take the best, because we've done some things really well and there's been some great ideas, and then also be able to facilitate bringing the ideas of the new councillors, of the new council, to the table, and we can sort that out. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have their strengths.
Well, and that's a good point. I mean, putting people in portfolios that work to their strength, obviously, is the best thing to do. And I know that currently what happens is the mayor will sit down with the council elected a member and say, okay, well, we have these various portfolios. This portfolio is going to go to this person, and this person's going to have this portfolio, and we'd like to talk to you about this portfolio. But, I mean, the idea of putting someone who has virtually no economic experience, for instance, in charge of the economic development portfolio, I mean, that's happened, I'm sure, in the past, because most people who run for council, unless you're an educrat, which is, you know, a former educator, a retired teacher, or a retired principal, or whatever, most people are coming from what I like to refer to as the real world. you know, where they work every day. Or, you know, I mean, we can look at Jeff Lees, who is a working man every day in Port Hope. He works in the factories, I understand, here. And I know that Larry Sherwin is in a similar boat, where he works, you know, as he's a regular Joe, I think is probably the best way to put this, or a regular Joanne, if you will. So they may not have the skill set or the ability to do it, but they may not have the historical background, whether it would be planning, whether it's economic development, finance, all these different portfolios. So you're right. When you're writing reports as staff, where you are experienced and you do, you know, this is part of your everyday job, and you're presenting it to someone who essentially, you know, may not have that background, you've got to be able to put it in a way that they'll understand it, and in a way that the electors will understand it.
Absolutely.
So sitting around a table, talking to your council or your council elect, and finding out what their strengths are, quite frankly, just seems like a no-brainer to me. It seems like the way it should always have been done.
Well, and I had the fortune of actually being on the selection committee after both elections, the past two elections, because it's not just the mayor, it's the mayor, the deputy mayor, and the first councillor.
Mm-hmm.
And each member of council is asked for their first, second, and third choice of portfolio. I'm not quite sure how they get the information about all the portfolios, because you would think that you'd sit down first as a group and mm-hmm. discuss the various committees and so forth. I think it would be a good start for a council to be able to have that discussion mm-hmm. rather than to wait a month and not hear from, you know, the mayor elect, mm-hmm. Which is what happened last time. And I just think we have to start off on the right foot.
Well, if we're building a team, which is what council is, it's a team to represent the people of this community, and a team has to work together. You know, you've got your captain, you've got your right wingers, your centers, your forwards, and all those, if you use the hockey analogy. So you've got to sit around a table to determine who is best for those positions, right? You don't want to put a goalie at center. That would just be a bad move. And in hockey, to go back to the hockey analogy. So again, to sit around the table and talk to each other and discuss the strengths, because nobody knows until after Monday who's going to be on that council. Nobody knows.
Right.
And so, you know, there could be a couple of people returned, a couple of incumbents. There may be a completely new council. We don't know that. But those people are going to have to get to know one another. You know, they're going to have to sit around and talk to one another and find out what each other's strengths are, and then make the determination as to where the best fit should be. At least that seems to be the logical way of doing
There's
it.
There's another component which I'd like to throw in mm-hmm. as well, and I use this when, as you know, at council advisory to committees, there are applications that are received from the general public, and then the coordinator with that committee would make a recommendation to council. And what I have done in the past is an approach which has worked well, and that is getting people of different backgrounds. And I've actually been in a situation where someone who really had no practical background in the area.
Mm-hmm. No foreknowledge, if you will.
But their skills were in a different, like, for example, communications, or a willingness to serve, and they've had experiences which they may have not thought would be related to that particular committee.
Mm-hmm.
And they turn out to be some of the best people, because they have the enthusiasm and the willingness mm-hmm. to participate as part of that committee, and the willingness to learn. So sometimes, yes, you try to find the people with the strengths, but you also try to find the people who are willing to do something new. So sometimes the best fit is someone who has some of the skills, but not necessarily all the skills,
mm-hmm.
but a willingness to learn something new. And you get in that regard, I think people are open to hearing ideas mm-hmm. from others too. So it's a, We'll have to see when that time comes. We'll have to see how the council wishes to pursue it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a fresh eyes approach, right? That's how I would refer to that, a fresh eyes approach, which means, you know, you've got people who have been doing this for so long that they can't see the forest for the trees, because this is their background. Oh, I've been in communications for years, or I've done PR, or I've done this. But, you know, you take someone who has maybe used those skills as a factory foreman, for instance, or as a shop steward. So they've developed the same skills, the communication skills and the personal relationship skills, but they've been using them in a different setting. So to suddenly transplant them to this new committee where they may think, well, this is all fish out of water for me, but it turns out it's not. Oh, wait a minute, I've been doing this all along.
Exactly.
And that's the fresh eyes approach. Because now you've got a fresh set of eyes looking at a problem. They can see the forest for the trees,
mm-hmm.
and they're able to see, you know, the end of the road. for some people, they get just, you know, they're so stuck in what they've been doing for so long. And, oh, yeah, I'm going to work on this coordinator because this is what I've done in the past. And maybe, the best way to do it is say, well, yes, you've done that in the past, but you've also done this as well. So maybe we would find you to be a better fit here because you would, again, be bringing fresh eyes to that solution. Mm-hmm. And again, it's all about building the right team, right? And that's what we're talking about here. Is there a dream council for you?
I mean,
obviously, you're willing to work with anyone who gets elected. That's the standard response. But is there a dream council? I don't want you to name councillors, but is there a certain criteria you'd like to see in order to build the best council for this town?
If I could put it in one phrase, I would see a fair representation of the members of the community.
Mm-hmm.
That means, you know, there are men and women in this community.
Mm-hmm.
There are younger people. There are older people. People from different backgrounds. And I think when I get asked the question, who would you like to work with? I like to encourage the person asking the question, put together a good team. You know, to mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
And people have the different interests and different skill sets. And that's what I would like to see. I think that in that regard, I believe people will come to the table with an open mind.
Well, that's good, because we don't want any hidden agendas out there, that's for sure. We're going to take a break here. We're actually going to play a song, and then we'll be right back with more Miriam Mouton as we continue this afternoon here on Your Drive Time. Here's the Commodores, and still here on Your Drive Time.
Just a moment away, and I'm without you once again. You laughed at me. You said you never needed me. I wonder if you need me now. So many dreams that flew away, so many words we didn't say, two people lost in the storm. Most of all, I
All righty. Welcome back. Thank you to Lionel Richie and the boys in, that was the Commodores, of course, 1979. Still from the Midnight Magic album. Well, controversy or no controversy. Let's talk, if we can, about the Marina expansion. I talked to Gil about this on Monday. I mean, the issue that I have, and no one's really been able to answer this, not even Gil, was, you know, we have this idea that there is a waiting list for seasonal boaters, and yet we don't take reservations. How do you square that circle? How do you tell me you got a waiting list, but you don't take reservations? Like, how can you have both? I don't understand that.
Are you talking about reservations for people using the slips,
yeah,
or reservations for people who are looking for seasonal slips?
Well, people who are just looking to come in, not necessarily for the season. I think that was the issue that I raised to Gil. So are we selling more seasonal slips than we are having sort of transient slips? Do we have transient slips? Are there slips available for people? Well, I'm out on the lake this weekend, and look, Port Hope, look at Cobourg, looks like a beautiful port. Let's pull in there. Oh, we can't. Oh.
I think there was, on the Waterfront Festival weekend, there was a citizen who actually counted the empty slips,
mm-hmm,
and there's a high proportion that are kept for, like, transient or visitor, and that is interesting to me because I'm not quite sure how it's justified to keep that many slips open. When there might be more of a demand for a seasonal slip.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think the harbor plan needs to address that as part of the business plan for,
mm-hmm,
anything that might be changed in the harbor area. It has gone from being a marina master plan to a harbor lands master plan, which I think is a good thing because we're looking at the entire area, in context,
mm-hmm,
and not just focusing on a small area.
So when we say the whole area, we're talking about the area basically where the ecology garden is, all the way over to, say, where the lighthouse is, right? That would be the whole harbor area. I mean, don't they store boats just south of where the ecology garden is?
There is, but then there's also a patch of the West Beach that is mowed for the Waterfront Festival. So I would say perhaps from where the West High School track is,
mm-hmm,
and then across, all the way across to where the entrance is to the East Beach, which is the Sandy Beach.
Right.
So I think, and that includes the two piers, the West and
okay,
East piers.
So obviously we're going to have to wait and see what the whole harbor master plan is. And it's funny because, you know, for probably 20 years, they've been going through this exact same situation in Toronto with their harbor master plan. You know, so it doesn't seem that there's any quick fix here. It doesn't seem like there's we can do this because it's been done before. It's all new.
It's a flexible space, and I think it has been for over 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's many demands on it. There's seasonal demands on it, and I'd like to add also to what I had just previously said, because of its location with proximity to the downtown, the harbor master plan also needs to address the connectivity. Like, how do people get from the harbor to the downtown and vice versa?
Mm-hmm.
And not just by car or walking and cycling, but those connections, those streets actually are part of that. So it's always, as a harbor, it's always been, had demands on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best that we can do for our community is to have a plan that is flexible, is resilient to changes, because there will be emerging trends. I mean, who foresaw that all these paddling programs, you know, 6-7 years ago,
mm-hmm,
or longer, I think the dragon boaters have been there longer, there would be such a demand and such an interest from the public. So what is going to happen in the next 5-6 years that we can't predict?
Mm-hmm.
Open, protected water in the harbor, I understand, is very important to sailors themselves.
Absolutely. Well, again, it's something that's going to evolve. There is no cookie-cutter formula here. I mean, it has to grow with the community. As you say, 10 years ago, or maybe a little longer than 10 years ago, the idea of dragon boating was probably not so overwhelming as it is right now. People are really into it. I mean, we've Survivor Thrivers have been down there, I think, a little more than 10 years now. And but when I moved here, you know, I mean, that whole area was still basically industrial lands, right? I mean, a lot of that,
the oil
area,
tanks, everything, coal piles.
You know, all the crap, if you will, was still down there. So it's kind of weird because once we got rid of the crap, and it was like, oh wow, you know, it's I didn't realize this was, and my goodness.
I can remember as a kid that no one wanted to buy a house that was on the lakefront because it was too cold in winter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's prime real estate now.
Yeah,
you know, it's. thank goodness for efficiency in building.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of prime real estate, the West High School, that's something that the council's going to have to look at in the next 2 years anyway, because the Board of Ed's closing that baby down. It's a heritage property. It's already been designated. And, you know, is there something you think the town should be doing with that? I mean, one of the suggestions that was put out there, and Gil actually put this out there, was that, you know, we have a number of social service associations out there that provide service for people in need, and, you know, for people who are of lower income, you know, Transition House and all of these different organizations that work with poverty. And it wouldn't be a bad idea, perhaps, to have them all located in one central downtown facility. And so the proposal was, or the thought anyway, was that we use the West High School for something like that. Would that be something that you would think about, or what do you think we should do with the West High School? Should we even take on that responsibility?
Well, I absolutely agree that the West High School could be a public building, remain a public building with public use. I also feel that one philosophical approach to planning in this town, which I think needs to alter, is putting everything in one place. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's the seniors at the community center, whether, as you know, this proposal,
students all at the mega high school.
Decisions are made how they're made. But with regards to the current West High School, I see that as a public use building that may and have professional offices, may have some offices that, like social offices, there might be some medical practitioners, there would be classrooms that, mm-hmm. one of the ideas I had was, why not, in this day and age of technology, have classrooms where people from Northumberland or, you know, in a fairly close area, mm-hmm. could meet as a class, but yet the instructor, the professor, could be someone from UBC, could be U of T, mm-hmm. they're on a screen, and yet you have that classroom, that synergy of classroom, and you could have any institution mm-hmm. organized, whether it's a college or university or trade, or even could even be a knitting class or a photography class, mm-hmm. that they could book a room, but yet then it would be, the building itself would actually be part of Coburg's, like a public building,
mm-hmm.
and So I would like to see it as a flexible building that is a destination for people to collect. There might be coffee shops nearby. There might be little restaurants and, mm-hmm.
Well,
and
there
so
already
forth.
Are, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Exactly. So I think it's really important to give people different reasons to come downtown.
Mm-hmm. Well, I talked to Rob Washburn, and Rob Washburn suggested, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, right now, he teaches e-journalism and journalism at Trent University in Belleville. But he said Belleville, I mean, it's not a really great town in terms of being a town for journalist students, because really the only thing you ever hear about, you know, are drug busts and the occasional crime like this. Whereas Coburg, he says, tends to be a more vibrant community. There tends to be more involvement from the community. There's way more news out in this area. So wouldn't it be wonderful if we could woo, say, you know, Trent University's journalism school to a facility like that? And as you say, that could be done online in a classroom, right?
I think you're thinking, speaking of Loyalist College?
Sorry, yeah. I apologize. Loyalist College. Not
yeah, in Belleville, yeah.
Yes.
I agree. I think that there's a different vitality here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's I spoke with some people in their 20s, and they see the town differently. So I think any community that is actually included education,
mm-hmm.
In their downtown has really benefited. You know,
right.
If you look at Cambridge, downtown Waterloo, it's been a benefit. I really do think that it would be worth the effort for a town council to be involved, mm-hmm. in pursuing that.
Well, and there's got to be a good reason for the kids to stay, too. I mean, most kids I've spoken to who grew up here can't wait to get the hell out, quite frankly. There's nothing for them here. There's no work. There's no post-secondary education, as we just said a moment ago. So really, it's just a matter of, I can't get out of here as quickly. And unfortunately, because of the cost to live here, they're either living in their parents' basement or staying in their bedrooms, or they're moving on, because it is expensive to live in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that can be addressed by council, or is that something that has to be addressed just through the actions of the people
who own the property?
The expense
of living in this town?
Yeah.
I would like to advocate that we do need to pay more attention to affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And whether it's someone, you know, like a student, I've heard that in Toronto, for example, students are actually sharing apartments because that's the only way they can afford them,
right,
to go to school. So there's a different styles of living arrangement, mm-hmm. You know, sharing facility, sharing the kitchen and so forth. And I think that our planning rules, our planning bylaws need to facilitate that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so already on the books, we have things like granny flats and garden suites. Mm-hmm. And the intent of that is to be able to accommodate a member of the family in a separate living unit for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. So I think in order to address the affordable housing, we need to be able to look at different ways of making that happen and intersperse throughout the community.
Right. Well, actually, Deb Matthews, Deb McCarthy, sorry, not Deb Matthews. Deb McCarthy said, I mean, she is a single woman. She owns her own home. She's sharing her living space with someone else, a roommate. It's not somebody she knew prior to that person moving in. And she says, look, that's one of the ways that's going to allow me to keep owning my home and doing things like that. So sharing residences. So promoting that kind of lifestyle as well. I mean, we definitely have to think outside the box.
Well, when I first bought my home, this is back in the late, probably early 1990s, I actually took in one or two co-op students in order to help pay down the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And I rented out rooms and, you know, up to two boarders, it doesn't impact your insurance. And they were there for 3 to 4 months. They were excellent, excellent tenants. And we shared facilities. And I did that for a few years to pay down the mortgage. So that was the way, as a single person at the
mm-hmm.
time,
mm-hmm.
That was the way I could do it. And I also think it's an opportunity for seniors to live, to remain in the neighborhoods where they live, if they are able to share their homes. And that would also help with the cost, because taxes keep going
absolutely
up.
Absolutely, taxes, and you know, utilities.
Yeah, all of that. So, I mean, there's opportunities that I think should become more acceptable,
mm-hmm.
because it seems to be a natural way for people to be able to create their, say, quote-unquote families,
right.
of you know, people that are just seeking to be able to share expenses in order to have a quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the biggest issue for this town, right? It's a lifestyle choice. It's a quality of life decision when you move to a town like ours. Yeah, the taxes may be a little higher than they are in, say, Toronto. But Toronto, let's be frank, they've got unrealistically low taxes. There's only one candidate in Toronto right now talking about raising taxes. Everyone else is saying, we've got to toe the line. Well, the reality is, if you look at the 9 communities that touch the GTA, they've all got lower taxes than Toronto. Or higher taxes than Toronto, rather. So Pickering, Markham, all those areas that circle the city of Toronto all have higher taxes. Why? Because they know that they need them in order to cover the expenses. So that's something that this town needs to wake up to that reality. I mean, Bill McDonald woke me up to that reality probably 8 years ago when he said, you know, the reality is 0.5% off our property taxes is roughly $750,000. Where do you want me to take that money from?
What service did you want to cut?
Exactly.
I think we can do a better job, though, in actually letting the public know what they're getting for their services and
mm-hmm.
how it compares to other municipalities that are a similar size to us. Because I think that's one of the disconnects, is what exactly are you getting for that? And Cobourg has had a good track record in taking care of their infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some municipalities are not in that same, you know, category.
Well, our neighbors directly to the west of us, actually, they just had a huge issue. That's why their water rates went through the roof. I mean, it's the difference between a council that decides to kick the problem down the road for a later day when we know it'll cost more, or a council that's willing to say, you know what, yeah, it's going to cost us money, but guess what? If we don't do it now, it's going to cost us even more later. And that really is the difference between a council that is responsive to the needs of its citizens and a council that doesn't want to be held accountable to the needs of its citizens. That's a really serious difference. And that's something that I can praise Cobourg's councils over the past few years for that, and you get some of that praise as well. We're gone over. We're about 3 minutes past. The news will be starting very shortly, by the way, listeners. It's the last weekend, Miriam. What are you going to be doing over the last weekend? And are we going to? Can people look forward to hearing from you on election day, just to remind them to get out and vote?
Well, I'm actually out and about. I'm going, doing things, talking to people, receiving phone calls, emails, going door to door. I'm I'm out there. Mm-hmm. I'm out there. This has been a fantastic campaign. Excellent volunteers. Great to meet with citizens. Going out, finding out what the issues are. I have a list of things that need to be tended to if I am successful, and I hope that that's the way I land. And this weekend, yeah, I'll be out and about, and if people have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. My website actually has a lot of information, Miriam4Mayor.ca, and I'd be happy to hear from people if they have any questions.
There you go. So Miriam Mouton, she is one of three candidates for the mayor's job here in Cobourg. You can vote now, but obviously election day is officially the 27th of October, which is Monday. That is your last day. You have until 8 o'clock on Monday to cast your ballot. If you haven't already cast your ballot, I would really urge you to do so. And as I said, it's as simple as picking up your smartphone. And I mean, I voted on my phone the other day. So again, it's something that can be done like no problem. And really, it is a lot easier. Hopefully, it's a lot easier for people to get engaged. Thanks for being in here, Miriam. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Dave. It was my pleasure.
And my pleasure to have you. Coming up after the news, John Lee. He's running for council here in Cobourg.
Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County.
Live, a not-for-profit volunteer local. Community.